about Bitcoin. And, you know, we talked a little bit about the history of it. We talked about blockchain technology, explained that, how, you know, which is the foundation of all cryptocurrency, this blockchain technology, and why these transactions are safe. We discussed all that. And so we're going to be going to this NPR break here. And then we also have some callers who have been patiently waiting. So we'll get to those callers after the NPR break. And we also have a question that came in via email. Scott, if you can think about this question, what would William Jennings Bryan think about Bitcoin? And so that's a question that was tossed out in our email inbox here. And so William Jennings Bryan was an American orator and politician from Nebraska at the turn of the 20th century. And so thank you so much for tuning in this morning. We're going to be right back with this fantastic conversation about cryptocurrency and all things related to that matter. We'll be right back. Thank you.
Live from NPR News, I'm Giles Snyder. China says debris from its rocket falling uncontrolled toward Earth splashed down in the Indian Ocean, but NPR's Amy Held reports NASA says that's not the end of the story.
NASA Administrator Bill Nelson says China acted irresponsibly, failing to be transparent and putting people and property at risk. China says most of the debris burned up, the rest falling into the ocean near the Maldives. But U.S. Space Command says it's still unknown if debris impacted land or water. On April 29th, the rocket launched a piece of China's space station. But instead of quickly detaching, it made its way into orbit, then back down again, uncontrolled. It's far from the first time space debris has crashed on Earth. Just a few weeks ago, the Grant County Sheriff's Office in Spokane, Washington, says a pressure vessel from a SpaceX rocket re-entry landed on private property, and the U.S. company came to retrieve it. Amy Held, NPR News.
White House COVID-19 coordinator Jeff Zients says the U.S. is turning a corner on the coronavirus pandemic, speaking on CNN's State of the Union. He said the focus now is on getting more Americans vaccinated. West Virginia's governor says he's getting rid of the statewide mask mandate next month if COVID-19 vaccinations have slowed, but state officials claim enough of the population will be immunized to drop the mask restriction. Here's June Leffler of West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
June 20th will mark the state's 158th birthday and how far it's come during this pandemic, says Governor Jim Justice. State health officials claim that enough people will be vaccinated to safely ease restrictions. 65% of West Virginians 12 and older are projected to have one dose by then, assuming the Federal Drug Administration approves the Pfizer vaccine for those 12 to 15. Justice says he'll drop indoor masking requirements regardless.
We'll be close enough. We're going with that date, period.
Herd immunity is a high bar, but state health officials claim once 60% of a population is vaccinated, hospitalizations and cases should go down, even as things open back up. For NPR News, I'm June Leffler in Charleston.
The situation more dire in India. Health officials say the daily death toll from COVID-19 rose by more than 4,000 for a second consecutive day today. NPR's Lauren Freyer says this current wave showing no signs of letting up, and there are calls for another nationwide lockdown.
Local lockdowns are in place, and the southern states of Tamil Nadu and Karnataka are actually the latest to lockdown. But India's economy shrank 24% last spring under a national lockdown. So Prime Minister Narendra Modi doesn't want to repeat that. He is under pressure, though. The Lancet Medical Journal has an article out today calling Modi's response inexcusable, saying Modi's government is, quote, responsible for presiding over a self-inflicted national catastrophe.
This is NPR. At least 50 people are confirmed dead in this weekend's bombing of a girls' school in the Afghan capital of Kabul. An Interior Ministry spokesman says the attack happened as students were leaving for the day. More than 100 people were injured. The first funerals were held today, and some families are said to still be searching for missing relatives. To Iraq now, where a prominent activist has been assassinated in the southern city of Karbala. NPR's Ruth Sherlock says the killing has prompted his followers to accuse the government of failing to protect civilians.
Ihab al-Wazni became a prominent voice in the mass protests that erupted in October 2019 against government corruption and poor public services. He'd helped lead the protest movement in the city of Karbala, and friends of Wazni said he was planning to take part in the upcoming national elections. On Saturday night, Wazni was shot dead in an apparent assassination. Iraqi officials are investigating. As Wozni was buried, friends and colleagues expressed their fear and anger, saying his killing signals the inability of a corrupt Iraqi government to protect peaceful voices against Iraq's leadership. Wozni's death follows the murder of several other well-known activists. Ruth Sherlock, NPR News, Beirut.
The Georgia-based Colonial Pipeline is working to overcome a ransomware attack. The cyber attack forced the company to shut down a major pipeline this weekend, leading to worries about a spike in gasoline prices and concerns about cybersecurity. Colonial supplies nearly half of the gasoline and diesel fuel used in the eastern and southern U.S. I'm Giles Snyder, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia. For 30 years, committed to advancing educational innovations and research that improves pre-K to 12 learning. More at edutopia.org.
WMNF 88.5. We got Don Scott Jr. in the house.
What's going on? Joshua, this hat that you have, this hat, I just think it's being affiliated. I don't really want to be associated with this hat, man.
So in my old age, I decided to join a gang called the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Oh, yeah.
And so... I'm wearing a old school Bucko Bruce hat, which Don didn't even know Bucko Bruce was a thing. And so
I didn't know he had a name.
Yeah. And so, it's throwing him off the mark because he's a Philly boy. But let's get back to more serious topics. We got a great guest, Scott. I don't mean, that I'll deal with Don in the parking lot later. And so, and Scott, you still with us, bud?
Down here.
Okay, and so, Scott, we got some other callers that we're going to get to in a second, but I want to talk about one of the other criticisms of Bitcoin, which you point out in your website, is the volatility, right? So can you speak to the volatility of Bitcoin and why that could be a pro or a con?
Yeah, I mean, any nascent asset that has a low market cap is going to be inherently volatile until it becomes more of a, people talk about it being a global reserve currency, but as obviously the market cap rises, it becomes harder to move the market and it becomes more stable. And, I mean, we saw stocks drop 30% in March. Are they volatile assets that nobody should touch? I don't think your government would tell you that. Right. But yes, you see big swings. But the thing is that volatility is not really meaningful for someone who believes in the long-term use case or who's a long-term investor. You just buy some, you hold it, and you wait 10, 20, 30, 40 years like any other asset. And over time, it rises. So yes, it has short-term volatility, but so do a majority of assets. So to me, it's just kind of like another useless criticism because it always ends up going up afterwards. So if you just didn't panic and sell it when there was volatility, you always have made money.
Okay. And thank you for answering that. And let's get to a caller who's been patiently waiting here. And callers, we do have quite a few of you on hold, so let's keep our comments and questions short for our guest here today. Good morning, caller. What is your name and where are you calling us from? Caller, you're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, my name is Andrew. I'm from Tampa. I'm originally from Gainesville.
Oh, nice. And Andrew, what question do you got for Scott this morning?
I got a question for Scott. I was actually sitting around at dinner last night. Scott Melker's name came up from people who knew him at Gainesville and from New York and from a few other places. Scott has been successful in just about everything he's touched over his life. He's gone from being a DJ to a music producer to now the wolf of all streets, and I guess the Bitcoin crypto yoga. I'm curious what Scott's going to be doing in 10, 15 years from now.
Oh, man. Okay, that voice is familiar because that's my best friend from childhood who also happens to be your state attorney.
He told me not to tell you, Scott.
I'm a listener on a Sunday morning to the Urban Cafe, Scott.
I don't know that. If I didn't know that voice by now, I would be in big trouble with two families, not only my own, but with his. That's very, very flattering. Andrew fails to mention my multitude of failures on the way up. I like to say that I failed my way forward. But to be honest, I hope I'm doing nothing in 10 years. I hope that we're all collectively, well, actually, I hope that I'm like, you're either working on your senator or gubernatorial campaign.
Are we making news? Are we breaking news?
Is this breaking news right here?
Strictly my hope.
We're definitely not breaking news.
But honestly, I hope I'm still doing what I'm doing. Like I don't think that I could ever really relax and do nothing, but I'm hoping that this space continues to mature further and that I can somewhat evolve with it. I mean, I really believe that it will continue to be important. And I hope that that's the case. But really, I'm more excited about Andrew's future in 10 years than my own.
And I know there's quite a few people in Tampa who probably feel the same way.
Sounds like a topic for another show.
It does. And so for our listeners out there, our primary guest here today is Scott Melker, but we actually have a friend, close friend of his, Andrew Warren, who is the state attorney for Hillsborough County, who recently, back in November, won his re-election campaign, and he was a guest on this show, I believe it was in October. And Andrew, thank you for being a guest prior to the election. I haven't had a chance to congratulate you on your win, so congratulations on your re-election.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for the show every week, and this has been a really interesting conversation this morning.
For sure. Scott's been an absolute fantastic guest.
And thanks for joining in, Andrew, and being a good sport.
I would have stepped my game up if I knew he was listening, to be honest.
Well, he told me not to let...
One more quick question for Scott while he's, has a ton of people listening. True or false, when you scored that goal on me and we were 6 years old and our parents were sitting around watching, did I trip on a root?
You did not trip on a root. Andrew was the goalie to this day. Okay, maybe you tripped. I don't know. All I know is that I picked the ball, you were in between the ball and the goal, and the ball ended up in the goal. That's the only firm evidence that I have.
I think we need to go to the tape.
I will also say the other disputed incident is when Andrew and I had a pair of boxing gloves in his basement, and his dad had us fighting, but we each only had one glove, and my hands were still down when he knocked me out when we rang the bell. Right at the beginning, clocked me, didn't even get my hands up.
Protect yourself at all times, brother.
I wasn't ready. I learned a lesson, life lesson learned.
Well, thank you so much, Andrew, for calling in this morning.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Thanks for being a good sport. But Melker, he told me not to tell you. You got to do what your state attorney tells you to do. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you don't worry. That's not you want to be on the right side of law.
Absolutely.
Andrew, any last comments or thoughts?
No, have a great morning, everyone.
You too. You take care.
Thank you, buddy.
All right, so there that was Andrew Warren, state attorney for District 13, I believe it is.
Hillsborough County,
and old friend of Scott Melker and Don, and so that was a great call there. And so let's get to another caller who's been also patiently waiting. Good morning, caller. What is your name and where are you calling us from?
Okay, my name is Ricky, and I want to ask the wolf of the Bitcoins a question. In my neighborhood down the street at one of our stores, neighborhood stores on 40th and Hannah, they got a Bitcoin, what I call a Bitcoin ATM, and it's just a quick question for mine. Could you tell me on air how does that work?
To be honest, I've never actually used one, but my friend, his name is Hasib, he invented those like 10 years ago, and I love to hear that they're making their way around. It's basically... You're not taking out cash, obviously. All you're doing is purchasing Bitcoin. So you put your money in, I'm assuming with a credit card or something, and then you buy a certain amount of Bitcoin, which then goes onto your own digital wallet.
Correct. There's one down the street from my house, too.
Oh, that's interesting. So that kind of goes back to Clay's conversation about like internet access and how to be able to purchase this. So you literally have an ATM where you can purchase these Bitcoin then?
Sure. Yeah, yep. They're all over the world. Yeah, it's funny, but I've literally never used one. I think I'm aware of one in Gainesville. I've just kind of came, I think, right around COVID, and I never checked it out. But they're very, very popular around the world. Not so much as much in the United States, but
wow.
In other places where, like I said, people sort of have phones and don't have banks. Yeah, think about it. Like, if you never had a bank or access to a bank account, you would find things like this much faster than we would, right?
Yeah.
The United States is going to be, your average United States citizen is going to be the slowest mover to adopt something like this because we've never had the necessity. We have the luxury of a stable banking system that we're familiar with for hundreds of years that people generally trust.
Mm-hmm.
But Scott, my understanding is those machines, those ATMs are only for Bitcoin. So there's not for other cryptocurrencies.
Right.
That's Bitcoin.
That's correct. As far as I understand it, that's absolutely true. Yeah.
And so, Scott, we do have another call we're going to get to here in a second. But a question that came up in my head. So we've been talking about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency more as investment strategies, right? But is there a practical use for, you know, daily purchases around the corner, or does it already exist? I'm just not aware of it.
Yes. So that's funny. Bitcoin itself was created as peer-to-peer cash. That was the use, but it sort of evolved into more of a digital gold. Now, there are a million, like, there's literally 6,000 other coins that are listed on CoinMarketCap, which is basically where you can go to see the value of each coin. So there are cryptocurrencies for literally everything, but one of the most major use cases that's come out of cryptocurrency that's not Bitcoin specific is called stablecoins, which are effectively like the central bank digital currencies that we've talked about, but just without the endorsement of the government. But like USDT, Tether is one of them. USDC is a tremendously growing one. And much like the dollar on the gold reserve, these are backed one for one by actual dollars. So they'll put dollar in a bank, USDC in the case of the one I prefer, which goes into a bank in the New York trust system, like in New York State, and they have to put a dollar in there for every single dollar of USDC that they distribute, and then you can transact in USDC with no volatility and almost no fee all over the world instantaneously. That's how I send money. And so the OCC, the Office of the Comptroller of Currency of the United States government, has recently said two things which were kind of surprising to the Bitcoin community. One being that banks are now legally allowed to custody Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. That was huge, saying that a normal bank will be able to protect your coins if you trust the bank. Most Bitcoiners don't want their Bitcoin in a bank. That's kind of the point. But number two is that they'll be able to use stable coins as a competitor to ACH, SWIFT, Fedwire, all these other systems that we use to send money. And they are going to find it incredibly superior. There's no question about it. So stable coins really are the future, whether backed by government or not. So the use case of buying something with cryptocurrency, Bitcoin has somewhat, in my mind, been supplanted by stable coins for two reasons. A, when you buy something with Bitcoin, you may buy something when Bitcoin is worth 10 grand and then Bitcoin's worth 20 grand a week later and you paid twice as much, right? And number two is the tax implications, specifically in the United States, which are somewhat absurd in my mind. Anytime Bitcoin is not viewed as a currency in the United States for tax purposes, it's viewed as property like stock or painting, anything else. So if you buy a cup of coffee with Bitcoin, you have just sold Bitcoin and have a taxable transaction on that sale. So they've made it effectively impossible, or at least impractical, to use Bitcoin as money in the United States.
Because they see it as a property.
Right. So if I bought Bitcoin, you know, say you bought, $10 worth of Bitcoin and Bitcoin's value was 10 grand. If I buy a cup of coffee when Bitcoin's worth 50 grand,
now you're paying
I have to pay taxes on, you know, a five times increase in the value of Bitcoin for buying that coffee. So when I buy a $10 cup of coffee, I have to pay taxes on that $10 sale. Makes no sense.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Scott, I have a couple questions real quick. And they're kind of all, I think that, so, yeah. One, how do you become a member of the Bitcoin community, number one? Number two, when you talk on Twitter about different coins going against Bitcoin and different coins that are going with Bitcoins, which coins are they? And my friend Coach Don wanted me to ask you about XRP.
Okay, so if you're a trader,
okay,
in the Bitcoin community, Bitcoin is somewhat the reserve currency or the core currency of the trade. So you buy Bitcoin, and then you trade other coins with Bitcoin. So it's very complex if you're not used to it, because if you buy stock with dollars, you know the value of your stock goes up or down in dollars. But if you're trading other things with Bitcoin, you have to be concerned not only with the dollar value of Bitcoin, but with the value of the coin versus Bitcoin. So you kind of have two factors. It can be a bit complex at first. J. generally, when Bitcoin is volatile, moving up or down, all of the other coins suffer in their value against Bitcoin.
Correct.
So, right. So let's say Bitcoin goes up really fast. If you're looking at the dollar value of what we call altcoins, the other altcoins, it might be rising, but it's rising generally in less proportion to the dollar than Bitcoin is. So if Bitcoin goes up 50% against the dollar, that thing might go up 25% against the dollar. But what does that mean? You're looking at it on dollars and going, wow, I did great. But if you're trading to make more Bitcoin, which is what this market is about, you've lost Bitcoin, right? Because Bitcoin did better. So your concern if you're a Bitcoin trader generally is to make more Bitcoin, not to make more dollars. Because you make more Bitcoin, which then rises, and you get the compounding effect of both of them rising.
Got it.
Now, so number one, how do you become a Bitcoin part of the Bitcoin community? You are, man. It's a global community.
Oh, okay. So every
So like, it's not like you don't need like a you don't have to be a card carrying member.
Okay.
You know, I don't. There's no sign up form I'm aware of.
Charlton Heston is my president. Just kidding.
Yeah.
What about
Bitcoin from my cold dead hand?
And so XRP. We'll get to. We have one more question about XRD, isn't it?
XRP.
XRP Ripple. I don't touch it. I don't like it. That doesn't mean other people shouldn't, but they're being sued by the SEC for being an unlicensed security, and also for the practices of the actual company that prints XRP, which is Ripple Labs. Historically, I watch charts very closely. I watch price action, what happens. Every time the price of XRP rises, they have a very, very passionate, dedicated community. Every time the price rises, you see, because all of this is on a public ledger, you see XRP being sent from Ripple Labs wallets to exchanges to sell. So they are aggressively selling on their own against their own community every time the price goes up.
Wow.
That's not something that I want to be a part of. And like I said, so people talk about it like being hidden and secret, whatever. It's a distributed public ledger. You don't know. We have anonymity because you don't know who owns the wallet necessarily. But every time you see a big amount of coins move, you know it's happening. Money cannot be moved secretly with Bitcoin. It's a huge misnomer, or any of these currencies. There are privacy coins, but you see it. You just don't necessarily know who owns the wallet. But we do know who owns Ripple's wallet because they're the only people who have that many coins to move to an exchange and sell.
Okay. And Scott,
there's a million things to invest in. That is not one of them.
Okay. And you heard it here first. So again, just a reminder, you listen to the Urban Cafe on WMNF 88.5. We have Scott Melker, in subject matter expert and thought leader in cryptocurrency. He is known as the Wolf of All Streets. I love that name, by the way. And we do got two more callers I want to get to before we wrap up the show. Let me get to a caller. Caller, let's keep our comments quick. Good morning, caller. What is your name and where are you calling us from?
Yes, I just realized the important question was, who is it that we're paying money to buy Bitcoin? You have to use existing currency to buy cryptocurrency. Who are you buying it from, and who are you paying for it?
Good question. Good question, Clay.
Oh, and by the way, I'm all for Andrew Warren running for higher office. I think he's a great district attorney, and I think he'd make a great governor or senator. He should run against Rick Scott, actually.
I agree.
That's my... Yeah,
I endorse your opinion.
A lot of endorsements on here today.
He's a breath of fresh air as far as district attorneys go.
All right, and so Andrew, I hope you're still listening.
Andrew, you have a few friends, Andrew. Just thought it, you know.
All right, so let's get to the question though, Scott.
Yeah. Generally, when you're buying and selling crypto, you're doing it like much like stock on an exchange or through a broker. So obviously, depending on where you're purchasing it and how that's structured, you just pay a very small fee, much like you would pay a fee to buy or sell stock.
Okay, thank you for answering that. And then let's get to another caller, and then we're going to wrap up the show. Good morning, caller. What is your name and where are you calling us from?
Good morning. Happy Sunday. Eitan from Tampa.
Hey, how you doing today?
Not too bad. Interesting topic you're talking about. I don't know. I was at the beginning, but I wish you would really disclose some more information to help the public, because there's a lot of people that are unaware of it, and maybe he shouldn't mention that there's different fees for each crypto. Bitcoin is a crypto. They use blockchain technology, and there's different fees to transfer them. Bitcoin is one of the most expensive ones. It's very slow to process it, very slow. And Bitcoin Cash is not the same as Bitcoin. and Dash, and there's other countries have more use of it, was more business accepted. So the demand is slow because businesses are under pressure and not informed and educated. There's so much I go on, but I won't, but I'm an active trader, and I'll just leave it like that.
No, fantastic. Thank you for that.
I think that that's somewhat accurate and goes to a thing. Sorry. It goes to what I was saying earlier about the fact that Bitcoin itself has really affirmed its narrative as digital gold, something that you hold. It's a savings account. Most people don't want to actually spend it. There are much better cryptocurrencies like stablecoins. As I said before, Dash is great for actually transacting, and in foreign countries that is happening quite often with different cryptocurrencies. So I do not disagree with that, and I think someone would argue that the very fact that it's a bit slower and more secure and cumbersome is what actually helps to give it that digital gold narrative and value.
So, Scott, what coins are you watching now? Are you doing chart? I didn't get a chance to watch your last. No, I think I did watch your last YouTube. So,
I mean,
what you know, to the people that are listening in, they're hearing you talk about Dash, they're hearing you talk about Bitcoin. What is on your radar?
Well, I'm a bit of a unicorn because I do this 24/7. So there's like 200 coins probably on my radar. But in general, for the app, and also it's important to note, as I talked about, when Bitcoin is moving, you don't really want to be touching these other things. I'm not talking about as an investor. I'm talking about as a trade, right? Because generally they're going to lose value against Bitcoin. And we've seen Bitcoin correct now from roughly 58,000 at the top. It's currently around 44,000. And if you check the altcoin market, everything is pretty much down. Longer term, if you're new to it, I obviously do not offer financial advice, but it's safest, in my opinion, to focus on the higher market cap coins, the bigger ones. Like, if I was a beginner, I would be basically not trying to time the market, dollar cost averaging into Bitcoin and potentially Ethereum. And from there, you start talking about Litecoin, BNB. I personally don't like Bitcoin Cash, which you mentioned, but, you know, each their own, of course. And then you get into the ADAs and the ones that we've kind of been talking to. And then, like I said, you can go down the rabbit hole, 5,000-6,000 coins, all with completely unique use cases, extremely low market cap. You can make 100 times your money, but you're equally likely to go to zero just as fast. You know, so it's really a matter of risk tolerance and understanding, but I can't say that anyone should be touching any of that stuff unless they really got a pretty deep understanding of what they're doing.
Okay. All right, excellent. And so we do have a text message. This will be the last question from our listeners. When marijuana became big, government controlled, if not banned it, can the same happen to Bitcoin?
No.
Interesting. I talked to, for my podcast, I actually had a conversation, which hasn't been released yet, with a woman named Caitlin Long. And she is sort of spearheading the political effort in Wyoming, which is one of the most crypto-friendly states. Notoriously, a lot of companies incorporate there and are doing business there. And I made the exact same comparison in our conversation. I said, I remember when Colorado legalized marijuana and you had very clear laws in Colorado around what you could do, but you couldn't put the money into a federal bank. So people were driving around with, you know, truckloads of cash and didn't know where to put it. So you had this sort of awkward interplay between state law and federal law. There is a bit of that with cryptocurrency, but it's not marijuana. Marijuana can be banned. It's a drug. You cannot ban Bitcoin. It's a distributed ledger. It's global. It's not unique to the United States. What they can do, if you're wondering how regulators can make this very difficult, they can make it illegal or difficult to get dollars in and out of Bitcoin, right? They could basically legislate against or regulate against the on-ramps and off-ramps, the Coinbases of the world, the Voyagers of the world, where you go and you deposit your dollars, buy Bitcoin, sell Bitcoin, and take your dollars out. They can get rid of that step where you put the dollars in and out.
Okay. Hey, Scott, I do got to cut you short because we're running out the end of the show. Just real quick, where can people find out more information to contact you potentially? On your Twitter account, I guess?
Scott, everything is at Scott Melker on Twitter, ScottMelker.
All right. So we've been talking to the Wolf of Wall Street. I can't thank you enough for a fantastic conversation. I think we need to have a follow-up in a few months and continue this great conversation.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate it, buddy.
Thanks to Don for getting Scott on.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, fantastic. And so getting ready for the Sunday Forum with Alvaro and Walter and the crew. Thank you so much for tuning in this morning to The Urban Cafe.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everyone. Take care.
We're going to switch it over to the Sunday Forum.
Be safe.